You're listening to the Diplomats Podcast on Asian Geopolitics. As always, I'm your host, Ankit Panda, recording from Washington, D.C. And unfortunately, my regular co-host, Katie, can't be with me today. But in her stead, I'm very happy to have back, so soon after her last appearance, Shannon Tiezzi, the Diplomats Editor-in-Chief. Shannon, thanks a lot for joining me on the show today.
Happy to be here, Ankit.
Well, Shannon, I thought you and I could spend a little bit of time talking about what I think is without doubt the most significant geopolitical development in the part of the world that we look at the Diplomat in the last week or so, which is the results and outcomes of the historic meeting between Russian President Vladimir Putin and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in Pyongyang, North Korea. This was Putin's first trip to North Korea after 24 years, since he visited in 2000 when Kim's father was still in charge. And most prominently, the two leaders signed a new comprehensive strategic partnership agreement, which the North Koreans, for what it's worth, are calling a treaty. They are describing their relationship with Russia as an alliance. And this is, of course, I think something many of us have seen sort of the writing on the wall since Russia-North Korea cooperation started to accelerate. But Shannon, looking at this, I'm just curious, you know, what really strikes you about this meeting and what do you kind of take away in terms of the major significance here?
Mm-hmm. Well, there are a couple of things. One is, as you said, this new comprehensive strategic partnership slash alliance treaty agreement. All we know about it is what has been reported. As far as I know, the actual treaty itself isn't available for public consumption, but it's certainly being described by North Korea as requiring the provision of military and other assistance on an immediate basis if one of the parties is attacked, which certainly suggests, you know, some sort of treaty partnership. And that would be basically returning North Korea-Russia relations to where they were during the Cold War. They had a previous mutual defense treaty, and then that was effectively scrapped in 2000 and replaced with a much more watered-down partnership around the time of Putin's previous visit to North Korea. So for people who are seeing a new Cold War, this is kind of a shining example that we are, in fact, returning to the dynamics of the Cold War, at least as it stands on the Korean Peninsula. But another thing I thought was interesting was the way that North Korea in particular is trying to position this as bigger than just a bilateral development. This is not specific to North Korea and Russia, if you take Pyongyang's framing at face value. North Korea is trying to position itself as an equal player with Russia in reshaping the international order. So in summits between China and Russia, we always see these comments on creating a new, more democratic, fairer, multipolar world. And we're seeing that same language appear in the North Korea-Russia statements, which is fascinating because obviously North Korea has far less clout on the international stage to back up these proclamations than China, but certainly it's trying to claim that mantle that North Korea is a global player that is influencing this quest to reshape the global order.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I think that's absolutely spot on here. I think the North Koreans are making the most of this. You know, for me, I think the big significance here is that all of this is happening in the open. Russia and North Korea want the entire world to know that they are deepening their relationship. Russia obviously no longer sees North Korea as a pariah, which I think is, you know, worth noting. I mean, before the Ukraine war, actually, I mean, 2017 and earlier, I think the signs of convergence between Russia and North Korea, you could actually start to see as late 2018, early 2019. But, you know, Russia used to have, in the aftermath of the Cold War, a policy of strategic equidistance, which meant that they would engage both South Korea and North Korea. They had embassies in both Seoul and Pyongyang. But they, of course, supported international efforts to work towards denuclearization. You know, they did treat the Korean Peninsula as a non-proliferation concern. As you noted, you know, the Russians did downgrade their Cold War era commitments to the North Koreans, partly out of, I think, an understanding that this was what the West and South Korea and Japan sort of wanted to see. And this was, of course, a completely different era when it came to Russia's broader relationship with the West. You know, another piece of context here that strikes me as pretty important, and you know, here we can look at remarks that Putin delivered in Vietnam, where he went after North Korea, is that I think, in a way, this is about Russia also seeking leverage in its broader confrontation with the West. You know, I don't want to underrate Russia's interests in treating North Korea now as less of a liability and more of an asset, which I certainly think is the case. But in Vietnam, Putin said, you know, that Russia reserves the right to supply weapons to other regions of the world. And he said, given our agreements with the DPRK, I do not rule this out. And this comes after the South Koreans started to say that they would potentially consider arming Ukraine. And so the leverage mechanism here, I think, is if the United States and South Korea don't want to see a North Korea that begins to benefit from all kinds of Russian technical assistance, that presumably they should cease their assistance to Ukraine. Now, I don't think that will work. I actually do think Russia would probably end up assisting North Korea in a number of ways anyways. But I think an interesting question here is exactly how far will their technical support go? And the text of the treaty has become available in Korean, actually. And so we don't know the exact kind of translations, and there's some kind of interpretation issues. But, you know, I want to draw attention, of course, to the fourth article, which includes the what's been described as a mutual defense pact, but it's worded carefully. It sort of is worded very similar to the 1961 China-North Korea treaty, actually, which the understanding, of course, I think for a long time now has been that that treaty would be operative if North Korea was the victim of an attack. And I think the language here is very similar, that if either party is the victim of an attack or an invasion, that military assistance will be provided, which is different from sort of a collective security pact in the sense of a NATO-style arrangement. So those are some of the kind of takeaways that I sort of have. Article 10 is interesting because it talks about scientific and technical cooperation and mentions peaceful nuclear energy cooperation as well, which is really interesting, given, of course, how sensitive an area that would be for Russia and North Korea to cooperate on. But I do think, you know, this is fundamentally a new era in the Russia-North Korea relationship. Shannon, you mentioned China, and I do want to sort of pull on this because obviously, you know, you have tremendous expertise on China, and I'd be really curious what you've been able to sort of see from Chinese writing, what's being said within China to the extent that we can actually see these things about this convergence between Russia and North Korea. I think in Washington, there's the sense that Beijing doesn't like to see this because they'd like to ensure that China is North Korea's primary partner and China continues to exercise the most leverage over North Korea. Do you think there's concerns that Russia is starting to maybe dilute some of China's relative influence over North Korea?
Yeah, this is a fascinating question because on the face of it, you would think this is good for China. Because again, North Korea and Russia are adopting the same language that China and Russia are adopting. There's clearly a joint effort to dismantle the current international order, make sure that the U.S. has less sway and less clout going forward. But China is much more ambivalent about this development than you would might think. We've seen a lot of op-eds by analysts about a China, North Korea, Russia axis, you know, how they're this new autocratic alliance. And China is really kind of keeping at arm's distance from these developments. Its spokesperson from the foreign ministry, when asked about this, was very short and said this is a bilateral development between two sovereign countries. They did make a point of saying that friendly cooperation between Russia and North Korea is to be expected and should not be criticized. So there was kind of an implicit support there, but really you got the sense they don't want to talk about it. And it was particularly interesting to me that on the same day as Putin was meeting with Kim Jong-un, China was hosting its first 2+2 meeting with South Korea, which of course was one of the big outcomes of the Japan-China-South Korea trilateral summit in Seoul. Now, China was at pains to say that this timing was a coincidence, but at the very least, it really drives home the divergence between Russia's approach to the Korean Peninsula, which, as you mentioned, is very antagonistic towards South Korea right now, and China's approach, which is really trying to mend bridges and improve its relationship. Because South Korea is an important neighbor for China, an important trade partner for China. There are a lot of reasons that China would not want to antagonize South Korea, not the least being that a conflict on the Korean Peninsula is going to be hugely destabilizing for China in a way that it not necessarily would be for Russia, even though Russia, of course, also shares a border with North Korea. You know, these are security developments that are happening in China's primary region of concern, whereas for Russia, its primary region of concern is, of course, Europe.
That's right.
The Ukraine war. So China has more stake in what's going on here and is I think not entirely pleased at the potential for Russia's actions to further destabilize the security situation by helping North Korea perfect some of these critical military technologies.
Yeah, I think there's a certain element of wish casting also in Washington about the potential for China to be a productive partner in sort of pulling Russia and North Korea apart, because I don't think things will go that far. I think, you know, I think it's also worth noting that, you know, when the China, Japan, South Korea trilateral summit happened, China did endorse denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula at the behest of Seoul and Tokyo. My understanding is that China didn't really want to put that in the statement, but Japan and South Korea wanted to make sure that denuclearization was mentioned. And what was really interesting was that the North Koreans actually implicitly criticized China for that in their state media. And they haven't done a lot of that since 2018, which was the first year that Xi Jinping and Kim Jong-un met. And so that sort of did draw my attention, especially given that Russia is basically completely now setting aside its non-proliferation agenda. And here, too, I think it's worth noting that China and Russia, despite their agreements about the grievances they share about the U.S.-led world order, actually have very different messaging right now on global governance issues and on non-proliferation. I mean, China is not throwing non-proliferation caution to the wind in the way that Russia essentially has, so kind of making everything subservient to Ukraine. So I think it's really uncomfortable for China to sort of have to watch this play out. And, you know, I can imagine the kinds of messaging memorandums that are being passed around in the Chinese foreign ministry about what exactly to say about this. Because on the one hand, you know, China can't be happy to see a Russia-North Korea treaty talking about peaceful nuclear energy cooperation, right? That's just not where Chinese policy on non-proliferation towards the Korean Peninsula has been, especially since, you know, post-2006, when North Korea carried out its first nuclear test. And then the other thing here is, of course, the unknowable about, you know, whether there have been certain private red lines communicated by China to Russia on the kinds of cooperation that Russia can and should not carry out with North Korea. I'm not going to speculate what those are, but, you know, I don't think that's entirely unimaginable, especially given the leverage that China enjoys over Russia in other ways. But, you know, I think it's also just worth recalling that China's broader strategic interests, I think, on the Korean Peninsula with North Korea include sort of keeping North Korea within a manageable level of precariousness, right? They don't want the North Koreans to get too desperate where the regime's on the brink of collapse and China might have to absorb the consequences of that, be it through refugee flows or economic assistance to North Korea beyond what China's comfortable with. But on the flip side, I don't think China wants to see a Kim Jong-un who's extremely overconfident as a result of Russian backing and assistance, a Kim Jong-un that might be willing to engage in limited acts of violence against South Korea, sort of stoking potential conflict. And I think the concern in Beijing might be that Russian assistance might be taking Kim towards that upper end of confidence beyond the point that China might be comfortable, I think. But I think we still have to wait and see. I think we're going to begin to potentially see more evidence that Chinese views on this are sort of changing. But right now, I get the sense that China just doesn't want to say anything about this publicly, really, if they can avoid it.
Yeah, I think an interesting point is that China reputationally has a lot more at stake than Russia. Russia has basically given up on trying to be seen as a responsible global actor, and China still very much wants to be seen that way. They want to be seen as engaging productively on non-proliferation, as you said, on climate change, on any of these other issues. So the worse that North Korea behaves, the worse that is for China, because it doesn't want to break with North Korea for all the reasons we've mentioned, and it certainly doesn't want to throw Russia under the bus over Russia's support for North Korea. But, you know, say North Korea does engage in violence against South Korea, does conduct a seventh nuclear test, some of these hard red lines, reputationally, it would be very difficult for China not to say something about that. And it would really cause a diplomatic headache for its leaders. So I think, as you said, they're not actively looking to disrupt this trend of closer ties between Russia and North Korea, but they also don't want to get too involved. And they definitely don't want people to be lumping China in with Russia and North Korea, sort of foisting the responsibility off on China for the military partnerships that Russia and North Korea are developing.
Yeah, I think you started to even see the kind of public relations tension back last July, right, which was when we had that remarkable moment when at the parade to commemorate the Korean War armistice, Lee Yong-jong and Sergei Shoigu, the Russian defense minister, were in Pyongyang simultaneously. And the way in which I think Chinese media kind of talked about Lee's trip was very careful to sort of disentangle that from what was happening between Kim and Sergei Shoigu, right? I mean, Kim Jong-un gave Shoigu a tour of the Defense Expo, kind of marketing all of North Korea's wares to Russia. And I think the Chinese wanted to just make sure that this was partly, you know, Lyongjong's presence in Pyongyang was not an endorsement of that activity. It was part of the Russia-China bilateral, the China-North Korea bilateral. So I think these tensions are starting to get quite interesting. But, you know, I do worry that in D.C. we're going to hear a simplistic narrative about, you know, an axis of bad guys kind of taking form without sort of fully accounting for some of the tensions that exist here. And then I think the big question about Russia-North Korea ties is, you know, how much of the cooperation and the camaraderie and sort of the, I guess, brotherly sentiment that we're seeing in opposition to the U.S.-led world order is entirely contingent on the fact that Russia remains mired in a conflict in Ukraine, right? I think if things change on the battlefield in Ukraine, if the conflict arrives at some kind of frozen state, let's not, you know, be sort of too, I guess, Pollyanna-ish about a full-scale resolution, and Putin no longer needs North Korea's military support in the way that he has, how do we start to see this strategic partnership kind of change? You know, I do think there is a real strategic convergence here. I don't think this is all entirely a function of Ukraine, because as I said, we see the groundwork for this basically coming together after the Hanoi summit, really, between the U.S. and North Korea in 2019, when a lot of senior Russian officials start going to North Korea. Kim meets Putin for the first time that year in April. But that is, I think, also just worth keeping in mind, that the cooperation that we see here might not progress linearly from what we've seen since last July, when things really started to accelerate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think Russia definitely has some level of interest in continuing to support North Korea, even if only from the perspective that it's going to complicate matters for the United States. They can play spoiler in that way. But, you know, if we take Ukraine out as a factor and Russia no longer badly needs munitions from North Korea, the question is, what is North Korea offering to Russia for this? And I think that becomes a more complicated question. And is Russia really just willing to provide military technical cooperation essentially for nothing, just for the hope of geostrategic advantage? Because in the past, it wasn't, right? Like, mm-hmm. We really only saw the cooperation on a practical level take off post the Ukraine war, despite, you know, the ramp up in diplomatic relations that began earlier, as you mentioned. So, yeah, still very much an open question. And unfortunately, I think one we're not going to see the answer to anytime soon, as Ukraine conflict shows no signs of reaching any sort of resolution.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's a good note to wrap up our discussion. I'm sure we'll be back on the podcast to talk about the Russia-North Korea relationship and, of course, China's perspective on all this. But Shannon, thanks a lot for joining me today to sort of talk over all this, and particularly for, of course, sharing your insights on China, as always.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to join Ankit and hear your thoughts on North Korea.
Great. Well, for listeners, if you like what you heard on the podcast, make sure you subscribe so you can keep up with future episodes. And if you've been a subscriber for a while, make sure you please leave us a review. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps us make the show better, and it helps, of course, build our audience a little bit more, which we always appreciate. And finally, if you have suggestions for future content you'd like to see covered on the show, please don't hesitate to reach out to either myself or Katie. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll be back soon with more.